comes down and everybody's singing, they have a whole group in good idea, and you have wampers, you know. Once we went to one of the kirtan, it's called Manabandhana. Very nice. It's a very nice little kirtan about how Radharani declared a kumbh very nicely for Krishna. And Krishna was going with it to, he's supposed to go to the meter, but on the way he met Chandrabhu. So when Chandrabhu's comes, and Radharani's waiting. So finally she sent Alika to go and see where Krishna was. And Krishna looking, and saw in the kumbh of Chandrabhu, Krishna was there. So she wrote some note on the leaf up there. She threw that thing in. And when Krishna found that, he was old. I'm in big trouble now. So then he went back and he tried to pacify Radharani. But when you listen to their kirtan, it's not just the words, it's the judges of wampers and things. You can feel Radharani's mind, her anger, holding up and Krishna, I mean, throwing himself at his head, feet, putting his peacock feather there, just flute and everything, crying and begging forgiveness. It's really nice kirtan to do with it. They have a certain style in the Ganga and a certain style with the Wampa, which is shamanic style. So it's different from the Ganga. You want shamanic to do it? How do you feel shamanic to do it?
Oh, good.
First time in Wampa? Yeah. A few years ago, he came to us and said, Madhavendra, my whole life I've been through the kirtan, singing about Vrindavan. I've never been in Vrindavan. Now I'm an old man, I'm a guy singing. The new kids take us to Vrindavan. Yes, you have to come. So he went to Vrindavan that way. And then the next year he came and asked us if we could come in America. We should come. He was nice about that. He was speaking a few days ago about the first show in America. And the dad's in the back of the show. The rumors, in New York today.
Kirtan on one side and one on the other. And then the other. And then the small piece of
it. Oh, okay. No, just so you can get across, please. And all the top one is open? Okay, so this is within the section of duties of a snataka. Okay, rules of good conduct. So these are all under the rules. No, this is qualified and qualified. Okay, now here, this is for the grihastha after he is graduated. So then these are all then qualities that he's supposed to develop. Duties that he has and qualities he's supposed to develop. Or at least maintain, you know, maintain it. He should have gained them already. So here is avoiding attachment to accepting gifts. Okay, there was a whole point in the performance of the occupational duties that sets the whole mood in 10.1, is that he should not seek wealth through pursuits to which men cleave. In other words, things that are not good, things that are, it's just like, let us say if somebody does something very materialistic, then everybody will understand these things happen. Does that make sense? So those things he shouldn't do. Does that make sense? Because that's common, people do that. They'll do, if it'll make a profit, they'll do it, even though it may be bad behavior or bad quality or bad. Those shouldn't be done. The Brahmin shouldn't do those things like that. It's just not proper. Others may do, but he doesn't. So we see that sets the whole mood there. And so then, this one then, in the same mood here, avoiding attachment and accepting gifts. In other words, he performs his duties, people will give gifts, but he shouldn't become attached to getting gifts, because if he does, then he'll start to act in such a way to try to attract gifts. Then it becomes, you lose the flavor. The point is people give gifts because he's a Brahmin and he has good qualities, so they want to give something. Right? Does that make sense? But now if he's trying to get those gifts, then he doesn't have those qualities that people are looking for. Externally, they may say, because they don't see him all the time. Some people who aren't so sensitive, may not notice because of their respect for the Brahmins and this and that, and they themselves are not so subtle, so they may not notice it. But those who do notice, then they'll find it's not good. But in any case, it's always good to give to a Brahmin. Even someone who claims to be a Brahmin, who doesn't, you get double the benefit of giving to an ordinary man. If an ordinary man dresses as a Brahmin, claims he's a Brahmin, as charity, you give him money, you'll get double the benefit of giving to an ordinary man. Like that, just because the consideration of he said he's a Brahmin. Right? So that's why you see Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima went to Jarasandha. They claimed to be Brahmins. They dressed as Brahmins. They didn't look like Brahmins. They didn't act like Brahmins. They didn't do anything that Brahmins do. But just because they came as Brahmins and said we're Brahmins and we come for charity, then he'll deal with them as Brahmins. So that's the rule. So people will deal, you know, if they're pious. But the difficulty is he shouldn't act in these ways. Otherwise he lowers his status. Because his business is studying and teaching. Like that. That's his business. So he should always be very, very careful that, and accept that the gifts will come, but he shouldn't act in such a way to attract gifts. Because that means he's attached to them. It's just when they come, and if they don't come, they don't come. He performs his duties. Avoiding accepting presents without knowledge of the rules. If he doesn't understand that when you take gifts, you take karma. And he doesn't understand that karma goes by sadhana, by proper performance of his duties. Then he shouldn't take gifts. Because otherwise they get attached to the gifts, they take the gifts, they don't have the power to throw off the sin that comes with the gifts. Then what happens eventually is they'll go to hell and those who give to him go to hell. Like that. So, and this is, we're talking Brahmins here, you know. So it says, then it says the ignorance. So there are Brahmins who they're born in the Brahmin family, they have some little qualities, but they don't have any knowledge and don't really maybe have strong character. So then that's the next point. So this false precept. The ignorant need to be fearful of accepting gifts because gift carries karma. No ifs, no ands, no buts. It carries karma. And that karma is based on the person themselves and the method that the money was raised by. If the money was raised by honest means, then it only carries the minimal of just whatever the person had. But if it's raised by sinful means, then it's very dangerous. It carries a lot of karma. So then in that case, it may or may not mention here. Yeah, no, it comes down here. Yen 10.7 means that when it's taken from anybody and you don't know the background or you know that the money is bad money, then it can be used for dependence, it can be given to gurus, other saintly persons, it can be given to the deities, but you cannot use it for yourself. You can use it for everybody else, but you can't get any benefit from it. So you can't say, oh, I'm using it for my dependents, I'm feeding them. And then they're cooking for them, and then you also eat from that. No, then you're getting benefits. So then it's very easy. But if it's only for them, you can buy things for dependents, for your gurus, for the deities, but you can't use it yourself in any way, shape, or form. Otherwise, the reaction is bad. But having given it to a Brahmin, they're purified by throwing it off onto that Brahmin if he uses it. But if he gives it in charity, then the money is purified. Then the person who receives it, they don't get any reaction. Like that. So there are rules. This is the point of the rules. If you don't know these rules, don't accept charity. Because otherwise you don't know what money you can use, what money you can't use.
You said the common.
Yeah, if he uses it for himself, it's used like that. So generally they won't use it for themselves. Means in times it means in a normal thing you only accept money from someone who you know is pious. But in times of distress you can accept money from anybody. But then in that case you don't use it for yourself, you use it for others. And you only use for yourself what is good money. I mean, if extreme distress is a matter of life and death, then you use it. But one has to be very careful when sadhana is very strong, because it will, reactions are there. So the deceptive. Cats, herons, and those unacquainted with the Veda. Does it tell? That's maybe. Cats and herons means, basically they mean people who are duplicious. They speak bad about others. They present themselves as very pious, but are not. They're very political. These kind of persons, and they're unacquainted with the Vedas, those shouldn't be given charity to. You know? You can always give them something, you know, just a little bit, but don't give them any serious charity. Serious charity should only be given to those who are qualified, because then you get benefit and they will use it in a beneficial way. These other people are materialistic, so one always is careful. Hiding under the pretext of a vow is that you have done something wrong, and for that you have to atone. So you're doing a penance for that. Then that penance, others will see, and wow, oh, he's so serious, he's very austere, and that he'll be glorified. So if he accepts that glorification from them and then presents it, yes, I'm very austere, then that's considered bad. You know, if he's doing a penance for a sin, then it's declared that it's for a sin. It's not that this is a, this is not positive, this is removing the negative. Understand? On the material platform, when you do prayaschitta, it takes it from negative up to zero. Right? But it's not called austerity, it's called penance. When you reach zero and you continue austerity, then it's called austerity. Then that's sacrifice. Then it gives you plus, it gives you merit. But otherwise, all it's doing is bringing from the minus up to zero. So when you're doing that, you shouldn't claim that it's the positive. You know? Like that. So, subsisting by imitating the dress of others. So that's also considered improper, because the others are doing it. You don't subsist by dressing according to some way that you'll get money from that when you're not that. That should always be avoided. Because that's a tendency. Someone likes or this or that, and then they dress in that way and walk around, and people think they're like that. You know? It's not an uncommon thing. You know, like that. Use of others' property. So that has to be very, very careful. That others' property shouldn't be used if one doesn't have approval. So it means it's their property, you use it, then you take sin. Like someone else's pukur and some other tree in the gardens, this and that. You go use them, spend time in them, and this and that. You take on one quarter of the sin of the person who dug the pukur. Okay. So, all these kinds of things, their vehicles, their homes, you don't use them without their permission. Otherwise, you take on karma of the person who you haven't taken the permission from. So these, yeah, if you ask permission, then there's no problem. If you don't ask permission, you just use it without permission. That's why it's said that, you know, if somebody's traveling, they should just stick to, you know, those things that are the, you know, God, you know, the Lord, the demigods, or that they've established. You know, the Gangas, you know, comes from heavenly planets, the Tirthas that are established by the great sages. All that, you know, anybody can use. Or natural things, natural lakes, natural this. Anything that's not man-made, that's better to use that. Because if you use what by men, then you have to take permission. You know, so when you're traveling, you see a pukur, it's dug, you don't see any people around, how are you going to ask? You're not going to walk around all day to find the person. You know, so better just stick to what is natural things. So then, okay, then importance of performing one's primary duties. The primary duties means what is the things that are the main, the actual essential points. Those, no, leave that open. Close this. But the secondary duties, those may or may not be performed according to time, place, and circumstance. So the primary duties always have to be done. Secondary duties may or may not be done. If the situation is suitable, they're performed. If they're not, they don't. But if you perform secondary duties neglecting the primary, then that's not good. Same rule will apply later. We'll see in times of distress that your main duty can't be performed. Therefore, you're performing another's duty. You know, like the Brahmin is doing business. So as long as he can't maintain himself by doing Brahminical duties, then it's okay if he does takes up these other duties. But if the opportunity is there, he can maintain himself properly by performing his natural duties. And he doesn't, then he'll get reaction. But if he's performing these other duties because he can't perform his own, then he'll never get reaction. Like that. So it's the same principle. And just the main duties must be performed. Secondary duties then may or may not be.
Okay.
Food to be avoided. If he's not invited to a sacrifice, as a priest, he's not invited, he shouldn't just go because he may get some free food. Because he won't be dealt with properly. Others may not recognize. He'll just be dealt with in a common way. And so it's bad for him, his ego, and it's bad for the host. Because the host has to take care of Brahmins. So if they don't take care of Brahmins, then they'll get a reaction. But now, if you're not invited, you show up, then they may not be able to take care nicely. So it'll be bad for all parties. Therefore, a Brahmin doesn't go to a sacrifice or some kind of program like that if he's not invited to. Or doesn't go to one that's just open to anybody. Anybody can come and take the shot. He doesn't go to those either. Because then he'll be dealt with in just an ordinary way. Because it's just for the common man. So if he walks in, he'll just get the same thing as the common man. And a respectable person can't be dealt with in that way. Therefore, he doesn't go. But if he can't find anybody, he can take something from. Then he can always take raw grain. Right? He can just get from any person raw grain, then cook it himself. Then there's no reaction, no problem. Because things that are uncooked like that, then they carry minimal reactions. If the grain is cooked, then it carries full reactions. Charity given with faith. Let him practice charity with a cheerful heart. So, charity given with faith, then the question comes up is now if you have somebody who's very qualified, you know, but he's a miser, or someone who's not qualified, but he's very charitably disposed, then, you know, some say that's equal. But Brahma says, no, it's not equal. Because the person who's less qualified, but gives with faith, his charity is purified by that faith. Therefore, that's better. So even if the person isn't qualified, but getting something from someone unqualified who has faith, who has respect, that's better than getting it from a qualified person who has no respect. So, therefore, one should give charity with faith. You know, if one's giving charity, it should be done in a happy mood. It shouldn't be done with a miserly mood. Yeah, I think benefits of charity, it mentions that you give to someone who's ordinary, you'll get back the same amount that you've given in the future. You give to someone who pretends to be a Brahmin, you'll get double. If he actually is a qualified, trained Brahmin, and he's gone to the Gurukul, he's learned his stuff, he knows his stuff, he's, you know, like that, qualified, then you get 100,000 times the benefit. And if he's realized in the Shastras, then it's unlimited. Like that, there's no result as well. And then it mentions this, is you should not be proud of his virtue. Because if you're proud of it, you lose the benefit. You've given in charity and then you boast about it, you lose it. You know, if you do austerity, you boast about it, you lose it. So charity, austerity, anything that's done that is, you know, pious or sacrificial or that, you boast about it, you lose the benefit. Like that. So the whole thing is you have to be humble. Because you can't, you've done, in other words, it's like this. One would say, well, why would he lose? But it's like this. You perform an activity, it will give you a result of some opulence. Right? But now if you boast about it, people will praise you for it. Fame is already an opulence. So you've converted whatever it is into the fame that you're getting from these people. So it means the actual benefit you would get is lost. It's just been converted. You know, it's just like, you know, I get, you know, whatever it is, you know, $500, like that. And it immediately becomes converted into rupees. So you lose. You lose. Accumulating spiritual wealth. Single is one born, single one dies. So now here the point is, as it goes through, the piety is there. You should be charitable, you should be favorable. You should, you know, be careful in accepting charity, you should be careful in, you know, giving charity the proper. But the point is made is the real thing is spiritual merit. Because spiritual merit goes with you. All these other things, they're pious, they're nice, but the real thing that goes with you always is spiritual merit. You know, so these are these points where you get a glimmer of the actual transcendence. All the scriptures do this. But the scriptures are to engage people who have material needs indirectly in the Lord's service. Because within it, then there's always these things. Just like Mahabharata, you'll find things, points here and there, we'll talk about the Supreme Lord. And bhakti and this and how that's the highest. But it's rare. You know, you get a whole bunch right in the Bhagavad Gita. And it's 700 shlokas out of 100,000. Where it's very direct and obvious. And otherwise, other places, here and there, you get it if you're smart. So Manu does the same thing, like that. You'll find in the first chapter, you'll find here and there through the main text. Then you'll find when it's discussing sannyas, and then when it's in the 12th chapter. These places, it's much more obvious that spiritual, you know, transcendence is the real piety. But otherwise, then the trouble is, it's just most of the work, you know, you basically have 10 chapters that are talking about all kinds of things. You may miss the point. But it's designed like that. For the materialist, if you put in this space that only devotional service, then the atheist can't handle us if he won't be pious, he won't follow the Veda. It'll be a nonsense. So that's worse. The better he follows the Veda, and it's a pious nonsense. Because a pious nonsense may surrender, because four kinds of pious people surrender. Right? The impious don't. So, better he's pious, he's already has a guru, he already follows sadhana by the scripture, he already, you know, follows principles of, you know, charity and austerity and respect for elders and all good things for devotional service. They're all part of Vaishnava etiquette. But he's doing it without Krishna. So if you take that person following everything and just put Krishna in there, then they're way ahead of everybody else. Right? Because they're very close to Krishna, but they're facing away from Krishna. And if I would mention that, the Indians are very close to Krishna, but with their backs to Krishna. Because they're following the Vedic culture, but they don't accept Krishna. They're looking away from Krishna. So with time, they'll naturally go away. Well, the Westerners are very far away, but they're facing Krishna. So it's just a matter of time until they move up. This devotional service is so powerful. So the principle is the person make him pious, then he's close. So if you can have a powerful preacher that just turns him around, he's right there. You know, you see with Prachina Barhishat, one conversation with Narad Muni and he's out the door doing devotional service. Like that. Same, you know, you just have the, they're so close, but they don't know about it. They only know pious activity. But you tell them what's the real thing, and then they just turn around. You know, him, who was the other one? He became Vitrasura. Chitraketu, you know, very pious. You know, Mriga. All these ones, very, very close, but had no idea about devotional service. So as soon as they come in contact, they're right there. So that's the idea. But the problem is people can stay right there for millions of lifetimes and never come in contact. That's the weakness of it. But at least they've given charity to people who are qualified and don't disturb the atmosphere, so qualified people can carry on. Like that. It's that make sense? Why it's like that? So that's the Vedic paradigm, like that. For devotees, then it's only followed. These points are only followed because they're just the natural culture. But the cult, it itself means nothing for us unless Krishna is connected. So for us, because these are Krishna's laws, then we're interested, like that. It's our culture, we follow it. But the point, as we saw, the primary rules are what's important. So the devotional service is the most important. That's the primary of primary. Right? Then the essential points of Varnashram. You know, a Brahman studies and teaches. Right? Does puja for others. He gives a charity. Other things are details. Right? He respects his gurus. He respects the shastra. He respects the deities. Right? He respects elders or senior people in management. Anyone, any kind of respect. That's there. These are basic principles. He's clean. Like that. He's regulated. Those are always, those can always be followed. But details may or may not be able to be followed. So if he follows the detail, okay, he dresses nicely. You know, he dresses properly and all that. But he doesn't follow these other qualities, what's the use? You know, it doesn't say you're a Brahmin because you wear a dhoti and chadar. A Brahmin wears a dhoti and chadar. But a Brahmin studies and teaches. Right? Because also a Kshatriya wears a dhoti and chadar. And a Vaishya wears a dhoti and chadar. You know, and if you look at it, a Shudra also wears a dhoti and chadar. It's a cheaper. Right? They don't have money to buy a Shudra. Right? So, therefore, the primary rules are important. And the essence of the primary rules is devotional service. So for us, when devotional service is in place, then these things have meaning. If there's not, then for us, it doesn't have so much importance. If one's not interested in devotional service, then Krishna says in the Gita, then be a pious person, follow all these things. Give in charity, open hospitals, do all kinds of awful works, that's good. Like that. And if he can't do that, okay, then he can be impersonal. Like that, you know, that's not the problem. But he always recommends that there is active devotional service. You know, either on the Bhagavad platform or the Pancharatri platform or on the Vedic platform. If he gives those three alternatives. You know, the Vedic, Nishkam, and Sattva. So being Vedic without devotional service, that's the fifth option. Right? And being an impersonalist, that's the sixth option. At least it's progressive in some way. Okay. And so keeping a good association and good conduct, these are very, very important. Because that's how you're going to maintain anything you do. Is by this good conduct and good association. So by association, everything comes. Then Amrita, that which comes without asking. The gifts accepted from anyone must be used for others. We discussed that. He who is dishonest in speech is dishonest in everything. So that's how you can tell that. Someone who in their speech is dishonest, everything else will be dishonest. It's like that story of Yaja and Upayana. Then Drupad wanted to have a sacrifice to have a son who could kill Drona. So he went around, asked all the Brahmins, and all the Brahmins, no, we're not getting involved in this. You know, this is too mundane for us. You know, it's too political. It's not our business. You know. So then, because the people who have that kind of potency, then they generally don't get involved in this. And the ones who do get involved in this don't have the potency. You know, so then he went around, and then he found the most qualified was there were two brothers, Yaja and Upayaja. So of them, Yaja is the older, Upayaja was the younger, but Upayaja was the more qualified. He had the potency to perform a sacrifice that could give that fruit. Because they have to have potency, just like Maharaj Dasara wanted to perform the Putta Kameshti Yajna for his son. So then Rishi Sringa was chosen, because Rishi Sringa's purity was like unrivaled. So he could perform the sacrifice to get that son. So then he went to Upayajna and he said, I don't do anything for mundane purposes. I only do spiritual yajnas, so and so. So the king just stayed there and as a menial servant for 1 year, just doing things around the ashram, just himself, not with servants, just himself. So after 1 year, then Upayajna said, okay, I can't do it, but I think if you ask my brother, he would do it. Because I once saw him, we were walking through the forest, and he was really hungry, and we walked on, past a fruit tree, and he found a fruit on the ground. And without inspecting the fruit, he just ate it. Because someone else could have taken a bite, it could have been a bug in it, it could have fallen in a dirty place, it could have been so many things, but he didn't even pick it up, look at it, or anything. He just immediately just picked it up and ate it. So he says, someone who doesn't follow, cleanliness in one area means he's not clean in other areas. So that means because he's not clean in what he eats, he's not clean in what he works, how he makes his money. So you ask him, and if he agrees, then he'll ask me to be his assistant. But it's his idea. So I'm just assisting. So he's performing his duty of helping his brother. But the performance of a materialistic yajna is his brother's thing, not his. So it's indirect. So then he did that, and Yajna agreed, and so then they performed the sacrifice. So by Upayajna's potency, then they were able to bring Vistadumna and Draupadi out of the fire. Like that, because they were powerful. Because it was supposed to be, they put it into some sacred water, or they put sweet rice or fruit. They put it into something that's given to the queen. The queen eats it, drinks that, she becomes pregnant. But the queen was out; she was chewing pan, and so she wasn't clean to accept it. So she had to go wash her mouth. But the two souls were there, and they had to be put in. So then they didn't know what to do. So then the king says, well, can you bring them out of the fire? And I'm like, okay. So they chant some more mantras and then they just came out of the fire. So that's powerful. But the point, his point was, is if there's impurity in one place, there'll be impurity in another. So you follow the whole thing back. If there's impurity in speech, that means everything else will be impure. Because everything's based on Shabda. Shabda is the foundation of everything. So if that's impure, means everything else will be impure. Like that. And I don't know if it's in here, if it's another place, it also mentions that I don't know how it would be worded, but the main point was is one should be most careful in the purity in how he makes his money. Like that. Oh, that was earlier. Before. What number?
Topic 9.
Oh, topic 9. Mm-hmm. No, because I think this is, I'm not sure this isn't the older one. Because I kind of remember, I think I brought out more detail in all this, so it comes out more. I'll have to check, because if it is, then I'll reprint this out for the next class. Then retirement. Then, so this is the end of the duties of how he maintains himself. His duties and how he maintains himself. So then the next stage after that, he does all those things perfectly, and then after a life of that, then he can retire. Details then will come up later. Right? Details will come up in the sixth chapter, exactly what retirement means. But the point is it mentions it there. That one who performs these perfectly, and performs his duties, then he is qualified to retire. He's done. Because you can only retire if you've done it. When you've done the activity and done it properly, you can retire from it, right? If somebody's worked in the company, done their work nicely, they can retire. If you haven't done it nicely, how do you retire? So the whole point is retirement is for those who are qualified. because retired persons then are respected by the community. Lawful and forbidden food. So discourse 5, then the Brahmins say, okay, then this is there, but we find that Brahmins, many times they have difficulties, their diet, younger ages, so how is that possible, since they're so virtuous, following all these qualities? By you following these qualities, you automatically have long life. So how is it someone would not? So that's the opening of topic 11. How can death have power over Brahmanas? Then Bhrigu says, through neglect of study, conduct, duties, and eating forbidden food. So when they don't do these things, they don't study, they don't follow proper conduct, they don't follow their duties, and by eating forbidden food, okay, then they can have difficulty. So we know that study, conduct, and duties are there. They explained what it is, so the inverse of that would be a problem, but now forbidden food he hasn't explained. So now it will be the topic is forbidden food. So then, forbidden food, then, basically it's anything that can't be offered to sacrifice is forbidden food. Like that. Then they give some rules on stale food, is that things that have been used in sacrifice, then they're not considered bad. If they are stale, in other words, here there's a difference between stale and something that's gone bad. Something's gone rotten. If it's stale, it's okay if it's from sacrifice, if it's prashad. If it's not prashad, if it's gone stale, then it has to be cooked. It has to be fried. You fry it, like that. Sometimes shallow fry it, deep fry it. Then if it's just stale, it can be used. But anything that's gone rotten is rotten. Like that. But prashad is never considered bad. Even stale, you don't have to do anything with it as it is. Therefore, you have some prashad, from temple ladu, and it's still, after a month, it's still good. You can eat it, though it's stale. It's not forbidden food. Because the other will be in the mode of ignorance. So prashad never goes into the mode of ignorance. Like that. While other foods will go into the mode of ignorance, and they have to be refried to bring them up again. Does that make sense? Because Brahmins aren't supposed to take it from the mode of ignorance. So then it gets into the whole point is that in these other ages, then performance of sacrifice in the first three ages, then animal sacrifice is a part of the thing. The shraddhas and the animal sacrifices. Then in there, then they may be eating meat that has been offered in the sacrifice. So there's very minimal animals that fit into that category. Means that most of them are not ones that are eaten presently. Your pigs, your cows, your chickens. These things aren't counted as edible in any sense, in any case, like that. So that, but those ones that are offered in the sacrifices, then if they're sacrificed according to the rules, there's no sin. Because you won't go to hell for killing and eating the animal. Right, if they're used in these sacrifices, these animal sacrifices. No sin. But this is where the karma shastras basically generally leave the point. These people will read them, and it's on karma, so there's no sin. So if you say there's no sin, then immediately they think, okay, I can do it. But it doesn't mean that there's no reaction. That's the thing. So Manu then explains that there's no sin, and for someone to say that you, by eating that that's been offered in sacrifice, is sin, they're wrong. There's no sin. Both the living entity who sacrificed the animal and the animal go to the heavenly planets. There's no sin. Right? And anyway, in the universe, one living entity is food for another. Right? Prabhupada always quotes that. It's also in the Upanishads. Those with hands are, it means without hands are food for those with hands. Those with teeth, without teeth are food for those with teeth. Those, the weak are the food of the strong. Like this, it goes through this whole, like that. The immovable are food of movable living entities, like this. I think it gives those four. So that's a standard thing. So anyway, you're eating another living entity. So the main point is it's a sacrifice and there's no sin. But then he goes on to point out is that since non-violence is the main principle of the scriptures, you know, and then you ultimately that comes from the root of nonviolence, means accepting that you're a servant of the Lord, because then it's violence against the soul if you accept the impersonal path or ignore. That's the ultimate violence. So that violence comes down to then physical and all those things, so it's more gross, you can understand it. So then shunning the use of meat, you get more benefit. So then it points out is that even though by sacrifice it's perfect, it's fine, you shouldn't criticize anyone who does it, but someone who doesn't, they're better situated. Their benefits are greater. Like that. So the point is meat can't be obtained without injury. Right? You sacrifice the animal's alive. To eat it, it can't be alive. So therefore, there must be violence to make it not alive. Right? So it's violence. So it's, then it's against the principle of non-violence. Even though it's technically non-violence because they're used in sacrifice, they go to heaven and cleanse, but still, if you look at it, the method used is violent. Though ultimately, because it's for a higher purpose, it is technically not violence. But if you look at it, it is violence. So for those who can those who can understand this, they do it. It's not a problem. They go to heaven and plants. The animal will go to heaven and plants. But for those who can understand it, they don't do it because they don't want to go to heaven and plants. They want to get out of here. They don't go back to Godhead. So therefore, they don't engage in these things. So, and then if you think about it, you can't get it without injury. And then if you think about it, the origin of flesh is not a savory subject, right? Plants they're from a seed, they grow from another plant, you know, cutting, quite pure, quite septic, you know, nice ground, nice things. Things that grow on bad ground, on rotten things like mushrooms and these things, those are avoided. But the seeds and other things, vegetables, they grow on pure ground and all that. But flesh doesn't come by any nice means, right? It goes back to it's made out of semen and ovum, which are impure. Right? It grows in the womb, it's impure. Then they're born and this, and they grow up, and then you have to kill them. It's pretty messy business. From start to finish, it's disgusting. So besides being violent, it's disgusting. You know, they point that out. And then the quote that Prabhupada always quotes about the six layers of the animal: the person who kills the animal, the person who approves of the killing of the animal, the person who transports it, the person who cooks it, the person who eats it, and that's five. The killer, the sanctioner, the transporter, maybe the person who deals in it, who sells it, and then the person who cooks it, the person who serves it, and the person who eats it. That's it. The person who serves it. So then it mentions the rewards of entirely avoiding the use of flesh. Then it says that for an Ashwamedha Yajna, if someone does 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas in 100 years, right, then you are qualified to be Indra. Right? But if for that 100 years you eat, you know, food fit for sacrifice that is not is vegetarian, you get the same benefit. Right? You get the same benefit. So then, you know, why go to so much? How are sacrifices very difficult to go through? The money, the Brahmins, the time, one thing wrong, it doesn't work. You just have to be vegetarian, offer your food to the Lord. You get the same benefit. Right? So therefore, you know, it's just pointing out how from all angles just being vegetarian is so much superior than non-vegetarian. And then the last point it makes is the word mangsa. Right? Mangsa, which means flesh, means mam saha, means mam, I kill you, saha. Right? And then that means you get the opportunity to kill me. So this life I kill you, next life you kill me. That's the contract. So after all that, then it makes that as a final point. So if anyone's smart, then they're definitely going to avoid this one. Does that make sense? and purification of men and things. So then purification of men, so there's two aspects. There's one of just purifying the body, which is a few rules, and then there's the purification on death of the relatives. So for us, then, is just basically a time aspect. And here it gets into some details of what if you hear about it so many days after it actually happens, that. So first it points out Sapinda relationship, because this is important for marriage. Sapinda relationship ends with the seventh generation back. It means yourself, as you're taking as the first, and you go back six. You have a Sapinda relationship. They're blood relatives. But at the seventh, it's out of the loop. So even though they may be blood relatives at the seventh generation, it doesn't matter. You can marry into that family. Or if it's gone that far, if there's a death in that family, you do not become impure. So it doesn't affect you. So these two things are important, Sapinda and Sugotra. That you're the same, not the same line. And if you're the same Gotra, there's some impurity. If you're the same Sapinda, then there's impurity. You know, and then same is that for marriage, is that if either of these two are there, those are the considerations.
Does it mean you remain the Gotra and not the Sapinda?
It means because as I say, the women come out of another Gotra into your Gotra. Mm-hmm. So that means the people of that Gotra, the other Gotra, are Sapinda. They may not be Sugotra. They're not Sugotra. No, yeah, they come, but they can still be Sapinda. That's why you have to check the two. That's why it mentions both. Most people nowadays just look at the Gotra only. But technically they should also look at Sapinda. That is not, because it may be that there's some common relative before. Because there's been intermarriage between the families. Like that. So then therefore you may have a common relative. So there, that's why in tradition a family knows seven generations back, and that's considered a pious family. They know seven generations for this purpose only. That's the only reason it's seven. Like that. Okay, now if someone lives at a distance, then the point is when you hear about it, let's say there's 10 days lapse of impurity, let's say for a Brahmin, you hear about it after 8 days, so you only follow it for 2 more days. You don't follow it for 10 days. You just follow how much it is. If you hear about it after 10 days is up, then you just basically take a bath or like that. You don't have to. It means if you want, you can do for 3 days, but otherwise you don't have to. Like that. And, yeah, that comes at the end. And then if within 10 days... another death happens, you still only follow the first 10 days. You don't then follow the 10, because you have big family, you could be out for a long time. You know, people dying all over the place. Like that. And then, but it makes a point, let him not lengthen the period of impurity nor interrupt sacred rites. So if he's performing sacred rites, he's worshipping the deity, he's chosen as a priest for a sacrifice, then these rules of impurity don't fall on him. Like that. So someone who is fully engaged in the Lord's service and full sadhana, these rules don't apply.
Well, when my father passed away, I was in Scotland. So I got the message that after 5 days, mm-hmm. and someone checked me that he was gone. And then I got there on the news day. Because mm-hmm. 20 days, they break the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's when all the purification finishes and getting trained and everything.
On the 11th.
Yeah. So I got there on the 9th. So they are going to be 3 days. But then it's just that if you go there after the 10th day, or on the 10th day after they go to the Pinda, and then you have to stay for another 12 days. Is that just a local child?
It could be just local, because Manu doesn't mention that it's there. But the point is they have the local things for whatever the reason, and if it's not against the scriptures, they're followed. Mm-hmm. The king should authorize them and like that. If it's against the scripture, then the king can question it, and actually then they have to come up with, the seniors have to come up with a conclusion and mm-hmm. like that. But if it's not against the scripture, then it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't bother. But still, someone who is performing a vrata, mm-hmm. these rules don't apply at all. Mm-hmm. It doesn't apply to the king. Kings never follow impurity. The king doesn't, because he can't sit and go off the throne for 10 days and the whole country will fall apart.
What does it happen now?
Yeah, no, the king never follows.
The priest comes and does it for him. Like in the next minute, next minute.
Also, for someone who dies in a riot, someone who dies in the battlefield, someone who's executed, mm-hmm. then because of that, it's a sacrifice. So then they're immediately purified. So there's no need of also impurity on the part of the relatives.
What about somebody who's been suicided?
That then there is. That's not. There's no purity there. There's no purity for that. But it's like someone dies in the battlefield, then they're dying in the battlefield, they immediately go to the heavenly planet. So it was a it means they're purified, so that means they the relatives aren't considered impure. Yeah, and then restrictions concerning libations of water. At the end, then they pour water. But if the person has committed suicide, or like they're women who have joined a heretical sect, things like this, you know, the bad people done major pops, then no libation of water is done. You just don't do it. Because the thing is it's not going to, means you shouldn't do something that's not going to have any benefit. You'll get any result. And because they're sinful, there'll be no result. They're not going to be relieved from anything from that. So therefore, it's just not done. It's not done for them.
What should be done for people to
just the regular rites, but the libation of water is not. Mm-hmm. It's just not, because they're not in a respectable position. So it's just not often.
So basically they benefit from the relatives?
They get for the other aspects, but they just don't, it's just the water, the end is not the problem. Because the water is offered, it's a respect, it's a worship. So they're not worshipable in that situation. It's only a few things like that. Isn't it? But it's just not done. Because then you may say, well, why not? But the people who have to carry that libation won't take it. So why offer it? And they're just dead. They won't feel happens. Because in all these things you have people involved, demigods and their assistants who are making all these things work. So the point is they only do it in a certain way. It's just like you have an office. You have the guy, the secretary, you know, in the office, and then he has assistants. You know, you have the minister, he has his secretary and then his assistants. So you want the secretary, the minister, to do something for you. Then there's a method you have to go through. Now, if you decide, I'm not going to do it like that, but it doesn't mean that anybody, the secretary, or anybody will do it for you. You may say all you want, no, I can do this and that. So the thing is here we can see the secretary, so we know we have to do it that way. But here, on these things, it's subtle. The secretaries we don't see. The assistants we don't see. So we may say they take it, but they don't take it. They're not going to take it. You know, it's just the way it is. You know, like you have Sharavan. I've never seen any Sharavan. He was Savitri's husband. So because of her chastity and because of his great qualities, when his time for his death came, Yamaraj came personally to pick him up. He was too pure to go with the Yamadutas. You know, because they're not great association. You know? So he came himself personally because of his fire. So they consider all these things. If he's just an ordinary person, he sends his men. But if he's so great, Yamaraj personally comes and does. So it's otherwise it's not. So all these things work, but it's just a matter of if you're performing devotional service, then they become reduced or they're not important, but only because of devotional service. If you don't do devotional service, they apply. You know, it means you cook, you offer it to Krishna, then there's you're purified, you're elevated, it's devotional service. But you're a devotee, you cook, don't offer, oh, you don't have that, why be fanatic? You know, rub it up, dub, right? You know, then there's a reaction. Those vegetables are alive, you've eaten them. Somebody's got to get the reaction, right? They have karma, right? That's why they're a plant. They're a cauliflower, not a due to pious activity. They're a cauliflower because they've done something wrong. So what they've done wrong, you get, you've eaten them. You know, that's the way it works. The karma's got to go somewhere. But if you've offered it to Krishna, it's prasad, there's no karma. You know, the point is the material world works like this. It's not a matter of we believe it or not, or it's Kali Yuga, or it's the 21st century, and these things. No, it doesn't work like that. These things apply. But if you're a devotee and you're fully engaged in service, then all these things are taken care of. But if you're not engaged in service, then you have duties. You know, Prabhupada talks about it. You have the debts. Debts to the demigods, the debts to the sages, debts to mankind, the debts to the ghosts, and debts to the forefathers. Because by their grace, you have what you have. There's no forefathers, you don't have a family to be born into. So because they existed, therefore you exist in that family. Because due to your karma, you have to be born in a place that matches your karma. So because they have that same karma, therefore you have an opportunity to be born. Then the demigods arrange everything for you. The scriptures are there, and all the things, how to follow the things, the sacrifice and everything, are given by the sages. In your day-to-day interaction, you work with mankind, because without other people it's not going to work. And the ghosts also, but like the demigods organize so many things, the ghosts are also in charge of so many things. You know, it's like, they take care of all the small things, you know, different things in the house, outside, and the different directions and stuff. They take care of those things. So you have a debt to all these things. Like that. You have to pay that debt. Anyone who's a householder has to pay that debt. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Doesn't matter who they are, what country they're from, who they think they are. It doesn't matter. They owe those people. If you're a devotee, you're worshipping Krishna. Therefore, because you're worshipping Krishna, he's in charge of the demigods. He's the original forefather. He's the supreme person. You know, so therefore, it's all taken care of. You water the root, all these other five are satisfied. But you're not watering the root. You have to satisfy these five. Just the way it goes. So that's the thing, is Prabhupada made it so easy. So what he's given, even though it may have some aspects of the Varnashram that seem to be complicated, it's simple. You know, you can see here, just on death of a relative, you know, we're only hitting here the main points. There's so many more details that are there. Prabhupada has just given us that verse of, you know, 10 days for a Brahmin, 12 for a Kshatriya, 15 for a Vaishya, 30 for a Shudra. Because that's what Rupa Goswami quotes. Because that's for money. So Rupa Goswami probably just quoted for money. That's the essential point. Then all these other things are details of that. So they've only given that much. But if you're fully engaged in service, even that's dropped. If you're not fully engaged in service, you're out there, you're living with the, you know, doing all the material, then these things apply. If you're engaged in devotional service, they don't apply. Because you're following a vrata. You know, you're following the vrata of the pancharatic process. Then it doesn't apply. So, but devotees say, oh, we don't care for this. So they neither follow what Prabhupada says, nor how he simplified the Vedic culture. Now that they find what the Vedas say, they try to choose another path. Another path doesn't exist. You have the Vedas, you have the essence of the Vedas, devotional service, and that's it. Krishna says there's only one path. He doesn't say that there's another path. There's not an American path, or a European path, or an Australian path. There is Krishna's path, but there isn't another path. But that path has two ends to it. That end is, you know, Vrajavrindavan, and this end is hell. So, you know, there's a lot of options in between on the path. Which way you go, where you're going to end up. But the path exists. So then it's just a matter of understanding that's the science, and then how Krishna Prabhupada has taken the essence of that and given us in a very simple way that we can easily follow. Anybody can follow that essence in any situation. And then these are the details so one can appreciate, see that it's properly applied in your life, the etiquette and that, but at the same time is that you see what Prabhupada is given, how Bhagavatam is the essence. That's the thing. All these things you'll find in Bhagavatam, but all of these things you'll find connected to the Lord. That's what makes it easier. Because Manu doesn't connect it, and in some places makes it clear that that's what it's for. In the invocation, it says that the sages approach Brahma because he knows what all these are for, how they connect to the Lord. Other people can tell them what Varnashram is. They're sages, they know what Varnashram is. But they want to hear about Varnashram connected to the Lord. By following that Varnashram system that will give you shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, we want to know that Varnashram system. So that's the Daiva Varnashram system. So that, this is explained. That's why Manu is considered the main Dharma Shastra. There's 20 Dharma Shastras. Some say there's more, 40. But all of them refer to Manu. Manu is the root one. Because that's coming Krishna to Brahma, Brahma to his sons. Right? So in the presence of Brahma, then Bhrigu is speaking this. So what we're hearing is Bhrigu speaking. Half of the first chapter is spoken by Brahma himself. But the second half and the rest of the work is also spoken by Bhrigu. Therefore sometimes some people call it Bhrigu Samhita. But it's actually Manu. Manu here meaning Brahma. But it comes to us through Swayambhuva Manu. So therefore sometimes we see it's referred to the Manu here means Swayambhuva. But specifically means that's how we get it. But specifically its source is Manu meaning Brahma. But he got it from Manu who is Krishna, who is Swayambhuva, right? So all of, when you say Swayambhuva Manu, means Swayambhuva means he just manifested, self-manifest, right? So Swayambhuva Manu, the person with that name, he just appeared. You know, Brahma was sitting there trying to figure out because he had all his different sons. Narad Muni isn't about to have any kids. The four Kumaras aren't interested. You know, Shiva had kids, but they destroyed the universe, so, you know, that's out. He didn't know what to do, right? Then Swayambhuva just manifests. So therefore, he's Swayambhuva. But Brahma also just manifests from the Lord. He's Swayambhuva, right? And Krishna, he's Swayambhuva, right? He appears on his own. So here, the Manu, meaning Swayambhuva, can mean any of these three. Mankind gets it from Swayambhuva Manu. It hands down, because he's the senior of all the seven Manus. Right? Like that. And then, but he's gotten it from Brahma, and Brahma has heard it directly from Krishna. So, Manu Samhita is what Bhrigu has heard from Brahma. And then in the Bhagavatam, it's what Narad Muni has heard from Brahma. Because Brahma explains in the beginning, I've told all my 10 sons, so that includes Narada. So because this is the sages and this is for general application, therefore you hear it from Bhrigu. But when it's applied simply for those people who are one, the essence, you know, their purpose is engagement and full devotional service, then we hear from Narad Muni, what's Varnashram. So that's in the 7th canto, Narad Muni of Yudhishthira. So you find out of 5 chapters on it, 3 of them basically just talk about the Paramahamsa and how Krishna is the center and all those things like that. And the 2 chapters give some little bit of technical detail on how, you know, the 4 Varnas and Ashrams and women behave. Like that. So the emphasis is different. His emphasis is more on the devotional side and less on the rules. While here, then, it's more on the rules and devotional service is mentioned, but it doesn't come to the front. Only rarely it comes.
Then exceptions from purity. Okay, we mentioned that. Impurity does not fall on kings and those engaged in a vow or a sacrifice.
The king is an incarnation of the eight guardian deities of the world, because a king is empowered with potency from eight different demigods. You know, the sun, the moon, fire, air, Indra, the earth. Yama. I'm not sure if Kuvera is one. But he's empowered by them. That's why kings are not, they fall in a different category. They establish rules because they start a religious war, or they don't have, sin doesn't fall in. And that because they represent the demigod. If they do something wrong, that's another thing. But in another case, kings are altered if they're following them and talking, because they represent these demigods. So therefore also they don't become impure, because if someone dies, a demigod doesn't become impure.
Okay. Oh, here it is. It's in here. Purity and wealth is among purifiers. Okay, the 12 purifiers of corporeal beings. So there's, it gives all the, you know, the fire, the air, the ether, the mud. You know, these different things. They're all different things that how you purify everything. Then among the purifiers, purity and acquiring wealth is the best. So you can purify yourself the best by your purity and how you make money. So, and of wealth, the best wealth is knowledge. Right? Yudhishthira makes that point in the, what is it called? Yakshamiti. You know, when that time when him and his brothers were looking for this deer who had taken the yajna, the implements for starting the sacrificial fire. So then, they went to the Pandavas and they chased this deer, and they couldn't catch the deer. And finally they did see it, then they started shooting arrows and nothing happened. They didn't hit the deer. It would just disappear. And then the deer just disappeared. And then they sat down, they didn't know what to do, because they've gone out. Every time they go out, they're successful. So then wondered, what sinful activity have we done that we're not able to perform our duties? That we're always successful because we're doing this for the Brahman. How is it that we're doing our duty, how is it that we're successful? So they were lamenting like this. And they were sitting there, and they were so thirsty, about to die of thirst. So then Yudhishthira told Nakula to climb the tree and see if there's any water around. He could see a lake very close, just a few minutes away, and he could hear the water voice, and says, the lake there. So he says, okay, take our quivers, go bring water. So he went, and he got to the lake, you know, and then he went to drink the water, and then the voice told him, said, this is my lake, you want to drink this water, you have to answer my question. He goes to drink one sip, and he says, you know, after some time, then a reasonable time, then he says Sahadev, and he doesn't come, and Arjuna, then Bhima finally goes himself. He gets there, he finds all his brothers dead, so he thinks maybe the water's poisoned, or, you know, what happened. But he can see their faces aren't distorted, or they don't blue in color, so they still look very natural. So he figures the water's not poisoned. So he's so thirsty, says, drink the water, then we'll try to figure out what's going on. So he goes to drink the water, and then the same voice tells him, this is my lake, and you know, I have you, you know, you answer my questions, and then you can drink of this water if you like. He says, I'm not drinking it because it's your water. I'm not here to drink your water. I'll find some other water that doesn't belong to anybody. But if you want me to ask you questions, that I can do. So he says, well, who are you? He says, I'm a crane. I live here in this lake. My lake. And this is this monster crane that comes out and lives underneath the lake, standing on one leg. Big, huge monster crane. He says, the birds don't kill my brothers. These guys are too powerful. You know, they're sons of the demigods. They're not killed by anybody. How can a bird kill them? You know? So, you know, he's saying his mind is that the only one who could do this is actually Yamaraj. Because none of the other demigods, all the other demigods can't kill them. But only the Lord of Death could kill them. He just said, I'm a yaksha. You know? But he maintained his form as a bird. So then he asked questions, all on Niti, like that. You know, the problem, of course, that the famous one. The last four are like the most famous. So, of that, then one of them was
what's the most wonderful thing? You know, that Yudhishthira says that everybody is dying all around you, but each person thinks they'll live forever. Because that's the most wonderful thing. The other, he says, what's the best, greatest wealth? And he says, knowledge is the Supreme Lord. Because of all wealth, knowledge is the best. Of knowledge, then knowledge of the Supreme Lord is the best. So therefore, if purity and wealth, that is the best. Purity and wealth, that is the best way to purify yourself. So the mundane platform means make your money in a way that's not contaminated. But you take it higher, of wealth, knowledge is the best. So of knowledge, a study of the scripture is the best study. Then of mundane, just common scriptures, common literatures, scripture is the best. But of scriptures, then the transcendental are the best. So if you have transcendental knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the best of all knowledge. So in here, that's the best of all wealth. So that means it is the best of all purifiers, is transcendental knowledge. So that's the whole thing in here, is all of the Vedic literatures, they have that direct connection all the way back to the philosophy. That's why they're considered superior to mundane, just ordinary knowledge. Because the ordinary knowledge doesn't connect to the Supreme Lord inherently. Someone who knows very well the scriptures and that, and knows the essence, can find connections, because they can connect it to the scripture, and then from the scripture, then they can connect it back to the Lord. But it itself doesn't directly connect. So that's why the Vedic literatures are considered superior, because of that. There's every point you can connect it back. Some of us can be very indirect, and some of us more obvious. But in any case, they can all be connected.
Okay, then it goes through metal, gems, stones, all these different things, the ways that they are purified. So the basic thing is earth and water must be applied until the smell and stain disappear. So whatever it is that is used to purify, certain things can be purified by specific things, but otherwise everything can be purified by this. But it's applied until the stain and the smell go away, and then it's called pure. There's something like gold, you just rinse it in water. But if there's some stain on it, then it has to be polished until it goes away. So gold's the easiest to purify, and some other things are more difficult. So it gives a technical way how they are pure. And then there's things that are inherently pure to the touch, because otherwise then you could get really fanatic about purity. You can get completely freaked out, like the Shudra has brought the pots, and the clay pots are contaminated by touch, so the Shudra, he's impure, he's brought the pots, and they're all useless. But only Shudras make pots, only Shudras transport pots, only Shudras will sell you the pot. So then what do you do? So there, the point is the hands of a Shudra are always considered pure. Like that. The rest of his body, no, but his hands are considered pure. If you know that he's done something really weird, you just saw him out, passing urine and then touching everything, then you might be more careful. But what you don't know, don't worry about it. Then like vegetables in the market, you see they're not kept in a dirty place, they're kept in a nice basket and look nice and all that, and the guy is touching with his hand, they're considered pure. So any marketable commodity is pure, if it's not obviously dirty. But then once you get it, you be careful about purity, how you deal with it. But you don't deal, so like that it gives so many things, like the flies, aren't impure, because if a fly falls in anything, the fly's been in dirty places. Now, no, they've done flies in here. Flies, I think the nose of a horse, because if you're taking a horse in a carriage and they don't go like this with you, so you're not, if they get slung on the horse, that's it. But otherwise, if they touch you, you're not impure. So these kind of things that are mentioned. So it's very practical also. And that tells how to cleanse the 12 impurities of the body. Right? It means 6 are considered more heavy, 6 are considered light. So the stuff from the eyes, from the nose, the saliva, that's 1, 2, 3. Ears, yeah, I can't remember what the other one is. These are light things, so it's not. You can just wash your hand, you wash them on the clean. But stool, urine, blood, what do you call it? Fat, marrow, semen,
those ones, then there has to be, you know, a bath, a washing of the things, or whatever. Right? These things are considered. And so, of all the 12, then you might like that. 16 lights is a serious thing. And then Achman is done, you know, before you perform any sacred thing, or after anything that's not considered pure.
Okay, so then, any questions on that? Otherwise, we'll end here. Because then the next section is the laws concerning women. So that's its own topic. And also to get into that, I think there's more detail. That means I'll try to print out these two pages for the next class. Anything on?
I'll give a question
It's not good. If it's prepared, you would prefer not to offer. That wouldn't be used as an offering in the temple and this and that. If you're out, you know, traveling and that's all you have, then as long as it's not against the principles, then that's what you have to offer. But in their regular daily worship of their deities, then they would generally not offer. At least especially if temple standard. Temple standard on anything prepared outside is not used. There's a few things, you know, flat rice, puffed rice, and this popped rice, those ones, because those themselves aren't complete. You take them and then you do something with them. Like that. But other things that have been cooked and all that, and then generally not offered to installed deities. Your home deities, then that's up to you, but generally would also be very careful there. But if you're out traveling, then, you know, you just are practical. You know, you try to get as best of what you can, but if there's nothing else, then there's two different occasions. It may have been the same occasion, but I heard it from two different sources. Is that Prabhupada was they were traveling on the train or someplace, and they were hungry, and the only thing they could get were these big chili pakoras. And they take these big Bombay lankas, you know, like 9 inches long, you know, like that. And they, you know, make a pakora batter and deep fry those. That was the only thing they could get. Right? You know, some common guy like that and probably say, when you're hungry, any old nonsense will do. So then the devotees all ate these chili pakoras. I heard the story when I was traveling to Panchavita. We stopped in one village and the only thing we could get was chili pakoras. So then he's told that story when he was there with Prabhupada when then the other happened. So he was that. It was really funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that. And then somebody else told me that they were there for the thing, but I don't know if it was the same one as the Panchavita was at, or if it was another situation. I guess on that kind of west south India, then a lot of times all they make is chili pakoras.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've noticed in Bengal they were pantala. So can you see food like that?
If it's prasad, then that's one thing. All it is just what's left over, then they keep it in water. Like that. And then eat it the next morning. But, means for yourself you could eat it, you wouldn't offer it to others, unless they agreed to it. Means you can offer leftovers to a Brahmin as long as you tell him that that's what they are. And if he accepts it, yes, but otherwise you would never offer leftovers. And if it's already, if it's offered, then that's, you know, okay. You know, but with Panta, you only have two alternatives after eating it. Hard work or sleeping. It's not a third option. It's very, super cooling on the body. And so because of that, then you can go out and work real hard and you won't get exhausted, yeah. That's why all you see all the farmers and all that, they all eat it, yeah. But if you don't, it cools the body so much you just fall asleep. Like that. So that's why you see generally, you know, laborers and that. Though an orissa is very popular. They all eat it, but they mix it with yogurt, which makes it even more clear. But otherwise, it's, you know, as long as it's offered. You know, it's like that. It's it may be stale, but it's not bad.
I guess when you were speaking about, you were describing this one who eats nothing full, he receives karma or goes into this. I also heard that one can develop those qualities. Those human entities, for example, one plays like mushrooms, and become part of the
May, well, I mean, karma means, yes, karma comes from mentality, but that's there. I mean, these things we don't dwell on much. Our point is to take the shot. Mm. We're not, we don't get into the inverse so much, because it's the positive. The other is there, and it goes on, and there's huge amounts of, you know, shastra on what happens. But that's not our main thing. Our interest in metaphysics is in how to get out. We're not interested in metaphysics, just for metaphysics' sake. So that's the delicate point, is in all these things that we're always trying to bring out, is that these used as a science to help us get out means it's just like one could say, well, what do we need Manu for? You know, because it's just a mundane social system. But the point is the devotees in our society today are going to the karmas for mundane social system. So therefore, probably gave us Manu. You want to go down to that level, then Manu. You want to work higher than this, then you have the Pancharatra. The Pancharatra is the next social system up. Because it's Ekayana, it's only directed at the Lord. You know, directly directed at the Lord. And only a few things are indirect. And those things are all taken from Manu anyway. Like the rules on your Akshman and taking bath and this and that, that are all, you know, just things that are, you know, not unfavorable, not favorable. You know? It means taking three times bath doesn't make you go back to Godhead, but it also doesn't take you away from Vishnu. So it's neutral. Like that Vishwanath explains, you know, these five levels. That which is direct, that which is supportive of that, that which is neutral, that which is not favorable, and that which is like sinful. So the Pancharatra basically is all doing with direct, the first and second levels. And because we have a material body, it reuses something from third, but it's always on that thing, taking a bath to do the puja, doing ashram. So that's a complete social system itself. Everything's around the deity, everything is, you know, an association of Vaishnavas, but it doesn't include household life, this, that, and making money and all those things. So if you don't want to drop to the level of Manu, then it's natural. There's no married life. There's no these things. You just engage and you just, you know, like that. Or if you're going to do, but your focus is on Pancharatra, Bhagavad preaching. But if there's any side thing on making money and working for yourself, then you have to come to Manu because it's at that level. You know, or even if Pancharatra is to, you know, rules and regulations, then it's Bhagavad. Like the gopis and the wiser Yagi Brahmin Maharaj. Katvanga. We just surrender this moment. That's all. We just act on the text and the fact. Okay. So these are the options. These are the social systems. There's the Bhagavat system of the spiritual realm. There's the Pancharatic system, which is simply the spiritual realm put into rules and regulations. Or there's then it's the reflection of that spiritual realm in mind. So these are the options. And then below Manu, that's Prajna. So these are how we do. So our basic thing is we're grounded in Bhagavat. We use the Pancharatra to get to the Bhagavat. And then those elements that aren't covered by the Pancharatra, then we take from Dharma Shastra. But we only take how much we need. If someone has more mundane interest, he takes more. Someone who has less mundane interest, he takes less. Someone who has no mundane interest, they don't take any at all. So it's only there. It's not our system. Prabhupada mentions in the Kali Yuga, you cannot follow this and be elevated back to Godhead. because we can't follow all of it perfectly. The whole society is not geared like that. So we only take the principal elements out of it and connect it all to the Pancharatrika five-way system. Then it becomes useful for us. Otherwise, we're not interested in going ashram. We're interested in going back to Godhead because we have mundane needs that are covered in Varnashram that show us how to use those mundane needs in the Lord's service. Therefore, it becomes useful. So that's the difference. So, therefore, for us, metaphysics, because it's not transcendental, but it is the bridge between the gross and the transcendental. So metaphysics for us is important. Like Kapila Muni, most of what he's discussing is metaphysics. Right? How all the toughest words you meet your last chapters of Gita, that's metaphysics. How the modes of nature work, the divine and demoniac, all these different things. These are metaphysics. But it's only if it's connected to the Lord, it's useful. It's not connected to the Lord. I mean, it's interesting, it's nice, it's, you know, it's like, you know, Vedic facts and figures and interesting and, you know, amazing stuff, but that's where it ends for us. Does that make sense? It's not so important. Okay, we should probably end here before we get even.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Should we come back and keep it there?
Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navati Tamastuma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We're on this atonement. It's 11. Anyone know where we left off?